Welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Andrea Wandersee, and I sit on the advisory committee for TMR, and I'm filling in for Emily Winicky this morning. I'd like to begin, as we do with all Syracuse University events, by acknowledging with respect the Onondaga Nation, the indigenous people on whose ancestral lands Syracuse University now stands. I'm now honored to introduce this morning's speaker. Alameen Muhammad is the founder of We Rise Above the Streets Recovery Outreach. He comes highly qualified to represent the poor and marginalized because for 10 years he was homeless on the streets of Atlanta. Before he took up the mantle to serve, he was a notorious drug dealer and a true menace to society. Raised in the Jeffrey Manor of Chicago in a Catholic Haitian home, by the age of 15, he had been lured into a life of gang violence and drugs. And at 25 years old, he was shot in a drive-by and nearly lost his life. Although he's experienced many other life-threatening incidences, one event inspired him to change his life. In 2008, a fellow inmate asked him what he would leave behind as a legacy for his two daughters. It was that question that inspired him to turn his life around and serve others. He connected to his creator, turned to Islam, graduated college, and became a life coach. In 2014, he founded We Rise Above the Streets and began to serve the homeless in Atlanta, Georgia. And in 2015, he moved to Syracuse, New York, where he continues to serve the poor every Saturday. Alameen has served more than 20,000 sack lunches to the homeless in the 2 years that he's been a resident of Syracuse. Through his Sandwich Saturday program, more than 500 people are provided a meal, clothes, shoes, and hygiene products every week. He's also coordinated and held several cookouts to bring awareness to homelessness. His organizations provided meals, hygiene, and winter items for more than 6,000 people collectively. We Rise Above the Streets has partnered with various organizations and schools in the area, spreading his message of compassion and encouragement to all who he encounters. Alameen mentors at-risk youth in the city's most challenging schools. He's inspired many to become servants of our community and has been a beacon of light in our city, invoking us all to action. He was featured on CBS This Morning News and recently received the Social Justice Award for his efforts, where he was also honored by the mayor of Syracuse with his own holiday, Alameen Muhammad Day. Recently, he led the protest for the young man who was doused with water by an employee at Dunkin' Donuts on the north side. Alameen is a full-time advocate and activist. Currently, he's in partnership with Lincoln Middle School to serve the children and families in the neighborhood. And he's also initiated the We Rise Above the Streets Youth Ambassador Program at other schools in central New York. Alameen is living proof that anyone can successfully rise above their condition. He's been instrumental in helping many of our citizens rise above the conditions of homelessness, mental poverty, and feelings of abandonment. He's the advocate for and the voice of the least among us. And for those of you who love social media, it's hashtag if we eat, they eat. Please join me in welcoming Alameen Muhammad.
Thanks so much. Thanks. How everybody doing this morning? Wow, everybody looks so beautiful this morning, beautiful smiles. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate that. Let me introduce myself. My name is Alameen Muhammad. I'm the founder of We Rise Above the Streets Recovery Outreach. We Rise Above the Streets Recovery Outreach is a nonprofit organization that goes out to the streets of Syracuse and feed the homeless, clothe the homeless, and reach the heart of the homeless community. Have anybody in here heard of Sandwich Saturday, We Rise Above the Streets? Okay. You all are welcome to come join us every Saturday at 10. Why I have compassion and why I tireless be out in the streets 6 days out of the week to bring awareness of the less fortunate, the people that are struggling through mental health illness and are invisible. I was homeless myself for 10 years, 10 years in the streets. Prior from that 10 years, I was originated from Chicago, Illinois. My parents was from Haiti. They moved to America to start a beautiful life, leaving the oppression of the president in Haiti in the 70s. When we moved to Chicago, my parents trained us to really stick to education and be the best that you could be. I choose myself to go out and to adopt the streets of gang violence and drugs and alcohol. When I first hit the streets of Chicago and seen that there was so much violence going on in Chicago, I told myself that I must be crazy at a young age to go out to Chicago and join the gang. What influenced me to join the gang and start doing drugs is because my parents, and I want everybody to pay attention to this. This goes on right now. My parents had problems. They divorced. So I didn't know how to act to separation of my parents. My mom had the beautiful love nourisher. My father was the stronghold man and always supported me and always pushed me. So when that love separated away from me, that was the love that I really was used to of a young man, a young child. So I went somewhere else to find that love in the wrong places. And I started joining the gang. I started using drugs. I started selling drugs. I started hurting people. As years going by, I started getting ranked in the city of Chicago, overseeing over thousands and thousands of people in gangs. It was times that I've been shot several times. And in Chicago, in the street of Syracuse, and all around the world, this is a sad mental thinking that young men would think that when you get shot, it's like cool, that you get more rank. So I used to feel like that. I got shot one time and I was pronounced dead, and they brought me back to life. Seen all my friends, got killed, been to so many funerals. I've been in prison several times. The longest bit I did was 20 years in jail. Age of 18, had been in jail till almost like 30-some years old. I had a rough life, a real rough life. It was just this one moment that I got locked up, and I told myself it's time for a change. Still went out and still did the same thing. So I decided I need to leave Chicago. I need to go somewhere and start all over. I need to go somewhere that nobody don't know who I am. So I moved to Atlanta, Georgia. Left everything, left my family. It was kind of scary, but I had to do it because I felt that something was going to happen to me real soon if I stayed in the city of Chicago. So I moved to Atlanta. Guess what? I found a job. My first job ever. I was so excited. It was a warehouse. I stayed in a hotel trying to save money so I get my own apartment. Trying to stay away from negativity, stay away from the streets. You know, everywhere you go, people selling drugs, there's crimes everywhere, but I was trying to avoid all that. Been at the job for about a year, loved it. Till one morning, right, I come to work, they laid everybody off. I couldn't believe it. I was real upset. I was real saddened. Didn't know what to do, because I was paying the hotel room and I was saving money to get an apartment. And I thought I was going to get a raise and move up to another position. So I went back to the hotel. It was a friend of mine's. He was real, real cool. We became friends since we've been in the hotel, but he was doing wrong, selling drugs at the hotel. So every time I get off work, I go over there, play video games with him. trying to be in denial, like he's not selling drugs, he's a good guy. So I went back after I got laid off and sat with him, started doing more drugs, and I decided to sell drugs. Now let me tell you that the laws in the South and the laws in the Midwest and East is totally different. If anybody been in Georgia or been to the South. So guess what I did? And guess where the guy was from? Y'all ready to hear this one? Yeah. The guy was from Chicago, so we became good friends. And I started selling drugs with him. So I saw myself selling drugs out in Georgia. I got caught up again. Got locked up in Georgia. I was facing 25 years, straight 25 years. You see, in Georgia, they sentence you through your record of all the crimes that you committed over the years. So when I was in jail, I ended up going to court and I found out that the guy said he was my friend. He got caught with some drugs and he told on me to get out a little bit earlier, right? And I couldn't believe it. So everything that he got caught with and I got caught with, all that was thrown on me. So it was that moment when I was in jail, from all the time I was locked up, I started finding out who Alameen Muhammad was. I started doing some self-reflection, some inventory about myself. I started rewinding the tape back, thinking about all the things I went through and I survived, all the things that I survived. I noticed I like flowers. Tell me what a gangster like flowers, right? I love smiling now. Come on, guys, y'all gotta get up with the script. You got a beautiful smile, Alameen. Come on, man. I got a tough crowd today, bro. So these are all the gifts that I find out about myself that I ain't know over 30-some years of my life. I started reading, found out I could read a little faster. I could write poetry, all this when I'm incarcerated. So it was my cellmate who always, he was kind of annoying, always asking questions, you know, and always telling me I don't need to do this, I don't need to do that, and I'm always cussing him out, and he always staying humble. To one night, I was looking at the pictures of my daughters, and I was about to go to court in a couple of days, and he told me that, Alameen, I see that you look at your daughters every night, and I have a question for you. If something happened to you today, what legacy will you leave behind? I broke down and started crying. The last time I cried, I think I was like 14 years old, 15 years old, my grandmother passed away. I started telling myself that I don't have no legacy. Only legacy I have, people will know that I was a bad person. I smoked weed, do drugs, hurt people, you know, doing all type of crazy stuff. And it really hit me hard. So I started getting in depression when I was locked up, trying to figure out what I need to do to really change my life. So I end up going to court. They offered me 30 years. Ain't that crazy? They pushed the years up. They say 25 in preliminary hearing, and I go back to court, they were talking about 30 years now. So I went back, and I was really upset and saddened. Then my cellie told me to come join them, his group, and we could sit down and have a discussion and talk about faith, period. So I went down there, we did a little reading, we started dialoguing, and it was a religion that I was really interested in, and I accepted Islam. And after I did that, it was one of the most beautiful times of my life. It seemed like everything rolled off me that day. 2 days later, I went to court. You ready for this? I go to court 2 days later. I'm sorry, 2 months later, they gave me 9 years and 1 year served. 9 years of probation and 1 year served. So imagine how I was looking. I was asking questions, and the lawyer kept pushing me, man, stop asking questions, you know. You know, go ahead, take that. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, it was really shocking. Like, you offered me 25, you offered me 30, and now I come back again 2 months later, it's 9 years of probation and 1 year served. So now I had the opportunity to go out and fulfill my dreams and start all over and do it right. I knew it was gonna be a struggle. I knew it was gonna be a struggle, but I was ready for the challenge. So I got out, I was free. Never forget, it was real cold in Georgia in January, in the month of January. I left out of there with a tank top, shorts, and some sandals. It was like 10 degrees out there. Quickly, I found clothing, trying to find a way to sleep, to find somewhere to go to lay down. I didn't know nothing about homelessness. I didn't know nothing how to be homeless, but I had to learn real fast because it was getting real, 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 real serious out there day by day since I got out. So it got to a point that I met a couple of brothers there who was homeless. They taught me the rope how to be homeless. Ain't that sad? How to be homeless, right? So months went past. I started drinking a little bit more. I was getting hungry. I didn't want to panhandle. I was stealing out of stores. Until one day that I was at McDonald's, I was so hungry, and I looked at myself in the mirror, and I saw the condition I was in. By the way, next Saturday, at Sam's Saturday, I'm gonna show the picture of me when I was homeless for the first time. I'm ready for it. And I'm about to shock a lot of people. This is my first time really telling you this, but I'm about to show all the volunteers a picture that I'm talking about right now. So I left out the bathroom, I was so hungry, I seen a young lady threw some food in the trash can. I went in there, ate out of the trash can. That right there, that day, I told myself that I'm nobody. All my life, everybody told me that I would never amount to nothing, I would never be nothing. And I started believing that. When I ate out that garbage can, it was the truth to me that I was nothing, I would never eat, I would never amount to nothing. That's when mental health really hit me hard, mental health illness, depression. Found out I had PTSD because they told me that I was in war. You follow me when I say that? I was in war in the streets of Chicago. It's like I was out there overseas. So one day, I was at the bus stop. The guy from Chicago drove up. He jumped out. He was yelling at me because he couldn't believe that I ain't telling him that I was out of jail and why you looking like that. He's shouting, yelling at me. So I was not saying nothing. I was at the bus stop, sleeping at the bus stop on the bench. He got out the car, threw a bottle at me. The whole bottle splashed across my face. A month ago, my friend Jeremy had a bucket of water poured on him. That was a horrified moment, right? But what I noticed, and that's why I took action, is how Jeremy looked and his body movement when he had that bucket of water through him. That look he had, he gave up, hopeless. Might commit suicide. That's how I felt that day when that guy threw the bottle on me, and I just ate out a garbage can about 2 days ago. And I recognized that body movement and that look that Jeremy had, and that's why I went out there and took action to advocate for Jeremy. So that day, I was walking down the street. I told my son I'm about to end my life. I was about to end my life. I was ready. A car rides up. Y'all ready for this? A car rides up. Mr. Santos jumped out the car and said, "Hey, your name is on top of the list for the detox center. We've been looking for you. Get in the car." So 2 months ago, I signed up to enroll inside a detox center so I could be clean. If you guys didn't know that in shelters and other areas, you got to sign your name and you got to wait till your name get on the first five and he could get in. That's what happened to me. The guy seen me walking, told me to get in the car and took me to the detox center. And I'm looking at him, I'm looking up at God like, wow. It's like the second time, you know, that I'm finna do almost life in prison. Now I'm about to commit suicide And this guy just rolled out of nowhere and told me to get in the car and took me to the detox center to enroll me in there. So I get in there, it was Memorial weekend. He said, Monday morning, all of me and we're gonna sit down and talk and we're gonna go ahead and build a blueprint and we can see how we can help you. Can you believe I woke up Thursday. My friends at the shelter told me that every time I got up, I just got something to eat and I went back to sleep. It was all because that I haven't touched a bed like in 10 years. You know, I haven't been around heat, comfort in several years. So when I finally got up Thursday, I went to Mr. Santo's office and it was intake and he was trying to enroll me so I could begin to do a transformation of my life. He told me share my story like I'm sharing my story to y'all. After I was done, he looked at me, he came behind that desk, he told me to stand up. Is there any social workers in here? Nobody social worker? If you know anybody that's a social worker, please pay attention and send this message to them. The social worker got up and looked at me and said, Alameen, you should never went through the things you went through. You went through some horrified moments. And I promise you, I'm gonna help you. And I believe one day you're gonna help a lot of people. Don't give up. I'm gonna try my best to help you. He grabbed me, hugged me, kissed me in my cheek, and looked me in my eye and say, relax, you're in peace. I ain't never, ever felt that love in the day of my life. Remember the story I just shared to you that all my life people told me I was nothing, I'll never be amount to none. And my parents got divorced when I was in eighth grade. The two loves separated and I got embraced to the streets. And now I'm 35 years old and a man grabbed me and hugged me like a father, like a brother, like a mentor, and told me that I was somebody. So I took that motivation. I got my GED. I graduated from Atlanta Tech. I was clean for a long time now. I started facilitating NAAA meetings and self-sufficient classes. I graduated, y'all. I graduated from Atlanta Tech. I got my associate. My mom and dad was out there in the crowd. My mom and dad was out in the crowd. This is something that my first time I ever worked something for. They out there in the crowd smiling, see me walking down stage in Atlanta Tech. I finally got housing. I never forget, I got my apartment. I started yelling for a whole week. Neighbors was complaining. I couldn't believe it was mine. Every time I come in, I'm like, wow. But you know what? Let me tell y'all about something about a homeless man and woman, how trauma followed them everywhere they go. Y'all ready for this? I was homeless. I had a brand new bed. I didn't want to sleep in the bed. I was comfortable on the floor. Bed was, the bed is brand new. I'm talking about plastic, everything. I was scared to lay in that bed. I was comfortable on the floor. This is what our brothers and sisters is going through in the streets. And when they overcome homelessness and they get back to the community, this is something that follows them, trauma. This is the stuff that I went through trying to get back in the community to be a human being, because I was always invisible. I was an animal, right? So I finally got housing. So I told myself one day, I want to help people. I said, I don't want to do nothing else but help people for the rest of my life. I don't want nobody to go through what I went through. I have the tools and information to improve the quality of these people's lives. Anybody that's suffering through gang violence, through drugs and alcohol, through homelessness. I know I can't save the world, y'all, but I'm gonna try my best. I came up with We Rise Above the Streets in Atlanta. I started doing a lot of volunteering. I started connecting with a Presbyterian church in Atlanta called Open Door Community. One of my mentors was a pastor. He's the best mentor ever. He taught me about community, the importance of community. The organization served over thousands and thousands of homeless community in Atlanta. I started being a part of them. for several years. Till one day I got on Facebook. Y'all ready to hear this one? I got on Facebook and met a woman. Y'all ready for this one? We started talking back and forth on the phone, on Facebook, through Messenger. We talked to her on the phone. She heard my story, I heard her story. We felt we loved each other. She came to Atlanta to visit me. We got married the next day. And we've been married for 3 years now. So soon as she left, we said we're gonna do the long distance thing, because I didn't want to go to Syracuse, because she was here in Syracuse. She was in the Navy down here. And I said, man, I ain't finna go to Syracuse. The only thing I heard about Syracuse was Carmel Anthony. That's the only thing I know about Syracuse. I don't know. I'm finna stay out here in Atlanta, continue my dreams, continue what I'm gonna do. So we decided we was gonna do a long distance. Guess what? It didn't even last a week. Yeah. And long distance stuff didn't even last. So I stepped up as a man, and they wanted to put no burden to my wife, and I left everything that I built in Atlanta, came to Syracuse. As soon as I came to Syracuse, I was in Eastwood. Before I make this comment, any Eastwood residents in here? I was hoping nobody said no. When I got to Eastwood, I was like, man, it don't look like there's poor people around here. Wow. I'm trying to help people. I'm trying to find somewhere to enroll, you know, to go to a Boys and Girls Club, to go to a NAAA meeting or something. I'm trying to, like, get involved in the community. So one day I dropped my wife off work, and I was listening to NPR, and they say that Syracuse was the most poorest metropolitan city in the U.S. I couldn't even believe it. I thought I was hearing things. So I called NPR, and I was on the phone with them almost an hour trying to figure out where this property was coming from. So I told my wife the next morning, all I want to do is go out to Syracuse and get to know the city and find out where this property coming from. These numbers are crazy. And that's what I did. Every day I went out to the streets of Syracuse, downtown, west side, south side, everywhere, building relationships. I'm gonna highlight that. I was building relationships. I was knowing people by names. I was giving them information that I know to help them. I was hugging, crying with people. I was doing so much with a lot of people in the street of Syracuse. I was trying to connect with different agencies, connect with religious facilities, trying to show people what I see. But at first, nobody didn't see what I saw. So weeks went past, I had to come up with something. I wanted to bring the community together, because I believe that a community could do a lot of things all together. We come together as a community, we could do a lot. So I went on social media, started friending everybody from Syracuse. Some people thought I was crazy. Friending people from Syracuse, I started speaking a lot of different places. And I told my wife that I need a location, because when I was in Eastwood, the landlord was kind of tripping because donations was coming on our porch. So I had to find an office. So I found 404 Oak Street, an office space, and I decided I'm gonna create an event called Salmon Saturday to get people to come together from all walks of life to go out in the streets and remove that barrier. And we're going out there hand in hand with our brothers and sisters. It sounded crazy at first. It did sound crazy, kind of dangerous. But I wanted to do that because I wanted to prove that the people we see on these corners holding signs, the people we see that sleeping on these benches, they're my brothers and sisters. They are human beings. They had a life before tragic hit them. So I came up with Sandwich Saturday, right? Numbers was coming up. Started with 10, started with 50. And started getting into the hundreds. I didn't bring nobody out where I was at first, because the first year, people was making sandwiches, and I was going myself, passing it out. It was the reason why I was doing that. So when I finally brought the community out there, and I was sharing my story all that time, and we was going out under the bridge, that bridge right there next to the rescue mission, I've been going down that bridge for 3 years. Now that bridge is a healing bridge. What I mean by that? Because it heals the homeless community, and guess who heals too? The volunteers. It heals the volunteers. If you ever get the opportunity to come to Sandwich Saturday, it's an epic moment. Because there's a lot of stuff that we hear and we adopt that homeless people are bums, they gotta get a job, and other things that we hear. But when you actually go to Sandwich Saturday, you won't believe what you hear come out these brothers and sisters' mouths. We got brothers and sisters that fought for our country. We got brothers and sisters who was professors at SU, was a husband, his wife passed away, and he couldn't handle it, and got in drugs and alcohol, and now homeless. These stories that I hear and now the volunteers hear, that these brothers and sisters are human beings. So my big break came when I had a cookout at Billing Park next to the hub station. The numbers was ludicrous. We served over 4,000 people that day. So that opened the eyes of everybody in the political office and the community, like, wow, these numbers crazy. 4,000 people in 5 hours? Y'all ever heard of that? In 5 hours, 4,000 people. And I ain't made these numbers up. And what's so beautiful thing about it, everybody came and seen it to volunteer. That's the beautiful thing about it. Everybody came and see these numbers. So after that cookout, the organization started rising. Volunteers is coming all around the city of Syracuse. We Rise Above the Street is an organization that the doors are open for everybody. It's not a religion-based organization. Everybody is welcome from every walks of life. We got black, we got white, we got, man, everybody, Muslim, Christians, but everybody's in one room for one reason, is to help humanity. That sounds easy, don't it? It's really hard in the world we stay in, right? So if I told you that if I was going to be in this position now, where I'm at right now, I'd be lying. Because I started doing this work, number one, out of redemption, and number two, to make sure nobody don't have to suffer like I did. The overwhelming of this community been really mind-blowing. Since after that Dunkin' Donut incident and that CBS This Morning News made national, Syracuse is one of the best cities I ever lived in, hands down, that I lived in. The community is so beautiful. The response of the community to come to Samuel Saturday, the donations, the phone calls, the letters. If I read some letters to you guys right now, you'll be amazed the letters that come through the mail as we rise above the streets. So I just want to tell everyone that the reason I'm sharing my story, whatever you're going through today, after you leave out these doors, you can say that little phone bill that I'm crying about is really ain't nothing. You know, this jacket that's been torn off me for about a month, it really ain't nothing. I could go to the store and get another one. I've been through so much, and there's a lot of people suffering as well. So never give up. Never give up. Keep fighting. And always smile when you see somebody on the corner. Always smile when somebody walks past you. It's not about money, y'all. It's not about money. It's about recognizing someone that's not invisible. That's what it's about. If We Eat, They Eat, it's a campaign that spread around Syracuse. It's because nobody deserves to be hungry. Everybody deserves to eat, right? Everybody deserves to eat. We're out here doing some simple things under that bridge that's making national news. And this is something we should be doing every day. Something simple. A 5-year-old could do that. Make a sandwich and give it to somebody that's hungry. We see on social media, right? Something simple. I just want to thank everyone for having me. Thank you so much. This Thursday, this Saturday, we got a Thanksgiving dinner coming, and we're predicting it's going to be a lot of people there. Everyone is welcome. It's at St. Lucie's at noon, and everybody is welcome. There's going to be a lot of people there, then we're back at Samuel Saturday every Saturday. Thank you for having me. I love each one of you. You're probably looking at me like, how does dude love me just met me? I love you, though. Okay? Take it. Thank you.
Thanks. Would you mind taking
it? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Does anyone have any questions?
The presentation just gave was a very emotional one for me, and I'm sure some other people in the room here as well.
Thank you.
And each of us probably has been through our own life stories, good times, not so good times, whatever. There's no question the type of people that you're working with need help. And you're obviously prepared to give it and have been giving it. The question I guess I really have is, how is it that we, from wherever position we're in, can find a way to reach out? I know it sounds simple to come to a particular place and just do it, but it's really not. Yeah. It's a matter of being comfortable enough that you're going to be okay when you go wherever it is, and you're going to be a help, you're not going to be a hindrance and things like that. How do people get past that piece of how do you really connect with these type of folks?
I'm not here to constantly promote Samba Saturday, but the best way to do it is with a group of people. Everybody that comes to the door at Samba Saturday, they come with the mindset like, say, oh, we're going to help the poor. We had people who came and said that while you're doing this, you're enabling them. They need to find jobs. But the time that you come there and you're there making sandwiches and sack lunches, bag and clothes amongst other people from different walks of life, people that's who have no jobs, people that's working in corporate office, everybody in one room, and you're building relationships with them, and then we're ready to load the cars up, then we go out to the community. And when you get to the community and you start, I'm gonna say it one more time, you start moving that barrier, you're face to face with our brothers and sisters. And when you see the reaction of our brothers and sisters, when you give them a coat, and then a conversation you start having a conversation with them, and you start building relationships with them. And that's when that the uncomfortable will just decrease. And it starts becoming an addiction that you want to constantly come back and do it over again. You follow me, my brother? You know what I'm saying? That you're actually there with everyone as a family, helping these brothers and sisters. Then all of a sudden, a conversation will start, and you guys smiling and joking around. Then all of a sudden, you're feeling comfortable. And sometimes a lot of people leave there and be like, I can't believe I was thinking like this. Why? People done told me this. And it's okay to think like that. I'm not saying that you don't have to think what the home, you have to, because people out here, you're not gonna learn nothing until you really see it. You understand what I'm saying? You're not gonna be, if you constantly hearing somebody saying homeless people are bums and they need a job, and you finally go somewhere and you see it yourself, it's mind-blowing. It's really mind-blowing. And thank you so much for that powerful question. Thank you so much. What's your name, bro?
Ed.
Ed, thank you so much, Ed. Thank you.
I'm hearing quite an indictment about the social service agencies in this community. You're feeding people at the entrance to the rescue mission, which does have a feeding program for the people who live there. And my question is, how is this community failing those who we think we're supporting?
So how is the community failing of that we're supporting? Is it how the community is failing? What was the last one?
I think she's asking, because of the work you're doing, does that mean the social service agencies here in Syracuse are failing people in need? Is that your answer?
Yeah, thank you. Wow. I try to be careful to speak up on that, because you know why I say that? You know why? Because we're different. When I was homeless, I'm going to speak for myself. I'm going to speak for our brothers and sisters that's out in the streets. I hear this all the time. When you go to these agencies, it's always nasty attitudes. It's always put your book bag outside because they fear of bed bugs. It's always something with them to make our brother and sister feel bad. And the most important thing that these agencies have, and I constantly say this during my speech, is always a table in front of them. It's something blocking them from communicating with our brothers and sisters. You know what I'm saying? That's how they failing. And then there's no hand-to-hand action. You know, one-on-one, there's nothing like that going on. This is why they failing. And social workers, if they embrace like Mr. Santos did, my social worker, embracing me, he actually changed my life. He did something that my father didn't do. And that's why, if it weren't for him, I wouldn't be where I'm at right now. So there's a lot of social workers that's going to SU that's taking social work, that come to SU, and there's a lot of them come to We Rise Above the Streets. And hopefully they'll adopt everything that I tell them, and they can take it out to the world and help other people, like Mr. Santos did me. You know, I'll try to be careful to talk about... I know. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Other questions?
Thank you for your presentation.
You're welcome.
But where are you located, and where do people show up to volunteer?
Yes, we have the headquarters of the We Rise Above the Streets, 404 Oak Street, and we're on Suite 111. But we had Sam on Saturday at 404 Oak Street, but the crowd been so huge, it's like a fire hazard. Like, you know, it holds only 60-some people, and the largest crowd we had was 475 people in there, you know. And the landlord been so kind, and I'm the one with trying to find a location. I'm still trying to find a building. But partnering with Lincoln Middle School and the school district, they've been so beautiful to us. For the past 2 years, we've been renting Lincoln Middle School cafeteria, and it's been a huge success to hold all these people. So on every Saturday at 10 a.m. at Lincoln Middle School, and if anybody want to come visit me or drop donations off, it's at 404 Oak Street. But this Saturday, we're not going to be at Lincoln. We're going to be at St. Lucie's, the Thanksgiving dinner for the homeless and the working poor.
I think this was really just a tremendous, you know, presentation. But I'm always interested in some of the institutional aspects of this thing. Right. So you went through this thing where, you know, you were 25 years, and you come back and they tell you 30 years, and you come back and they tell you 1 year and 9 years of probation.
Yeah.
So what in the world happened in that situation? And what changed, you know, that experience? And is there any, I mean, we've got thousands and thousands of African-American young men mm-hmm. locked up, and most of them, I think, have this experience 25, 30, yeah. and they're done, yeah. and they're locked up. But you had the experience that it changed. Do you have any idea of how that change took place, or what led to that?
Your
appearance in court was 30 years
yeah.
what they were giving you.
I end up finding out that they raided apartment, and I wasn't there, and the apartment was not under my name. That's number one. Then number two, I found out that they was funneling with the money. It was money missing and evidence was missing. So for them to like not to proceed, take me to trial, they still gave me probation, probation. And 9 year probation, because they knew I was gonna come back. And probation in the South, that's like a setup. To put you on probation, you put you on probation because they know you're gonna come right back, you know. But me, I ain't never came back. You know, I did the whole probation and continue with my life.
So it really wasn't a change in the regulations. It was a change in the prosecutorial
yes,
approach.
Yes, absolutely. So. Yes. Yeah. And you know what's so crazy? I didn't know about it till a year later, because I had a public defender. I didn't have no lawyer. It's a difference. You got a lawyer, they'll find out, like, hey, look, they found it with money, but he'll tell me everything. The public defender was like, oh, you're blessed. Congratulations. And a year later, I found out what happened.
Right.
You know.
Thank you.
I love these questions.
Other questions?
You can ask me any question. Don't be scared. You even can say what cell I was locked up in.
Was there one over here?
What's the number to say?
Well, we got one over there, too.
I can always ask a question. Thank you very much. It was very inspiring. And we're just so blessed, lucky to have you come from Atlanta to Syracuse. And
thank you so much.
Sarah's question about the about the social service agencies seems to me, from what I've been hearing, also very much anecdotally, though, is an issue that needs to be investigated more. And I hope that you have some venues and opportunities to do that for those who are really trying to attempt to make change here. Let me just mention something that I've been participating at a conversation group at the Dunbar Center. It's a weekly conversation group lately. I'm sure many people know the Dunbar Center. And it was very enlightening this past week. This is just an anecdotal story. They were talking about, there was a gentleman there from who has also come from another place, and he came from New York City, and he was telling us how shocked he was at how little programming there was at the boys and girls clubs in Syracuse, and the fact that there are only four, and there's not enough programming there. How that's one example, but I'm wondering about youth, because we all know, you know, like you, your story is from your youth, and then, you know, it's very hard to turn around a bad path. So, and you've done it. How can that situation be changed? I know nothing about social services, and you know, I've only come to this and recently in my life, but how can change be made in that regard? Like he said, he was just so shocked about these boys and girls clubs, and then we heard some anecdotal stories about how there were some attempts to do some programming there, and then they got canceled because of fear of violence. The police didn't want to do it, and you know, now we have a new police chief. So how can we bring this forward to the new chief and maybe get some proactive preventative activities going to get ahead of the problem?
Man, thank you for that. Me, anybody know Clifford Ryan, OG Against Violence? Clifford Ryan, OG Against Violence. He go out there and march to stop the violence. We had a discussion about this, and the same discussion that you said, that how can we bring awareness of what's going on and connect with the social workers. But my idea, I feel we should have workshops. You know what I'm saying? Like training. Like, this is a perfect example. During the Dunkin' Donuts incidents, when Jeremy got that bucket thrown on him, the owner of Dunkin' Donuts and I came with the idea that we was going to have training and workshops for employees, so if something like this happened again, they know how to approach it, right? And it worked. You know why it worked? Because the corporate office and the CEO of Dunkin' Donuts came themselves to San Wasada, did volunteer work, and they probably felt kind of strange because they had people telling them what to do. Yes, you need to listen, you know. And when it was done, they sucked up a lot of information they didn't even know about. So I think workshops, training from people who experienced. There's a lot of grassroots organizations that's in Syracuse that's working so hard in the community, it's not getting recognition. It's not even giving one recognition or a thank you or nothing. So I feel that if anybody experienced, went through a situation that could help the social workers and help students in SU, we should make that happen. You know what I'm saying? We should make that happen.
I'm gonna jump in with a question.
Yeah.
You were talking about how with institutions, there's the table and there's the process and there's this distance. I've got sort of twofold. How are you funded? Are you funded? And for agencies that are funded, there's this level of accountability that has been expected. There's data collection, there's files, there's record keeping, there's reporting, et cetera. How do you view that? How do you deal with that or don't deal with that?
You know, my sister, you're going to have me crying by that question. And I was hoping that question don't be asked, but thank you so much for asking that question. For the past 3 years, I have no grants. The past 3 years, the community has been taking care of We Rise Above the Streets. Well, when it comes to rent, when it comes to donations, when it comes to clothes, anything that keep us going, the community been taking care of We Rise Above the Streets. I haven't filed for no grants at all. When I mean not even one grant, no grants. Everything comes by donation. And my wife thought I was crazy when I first did it. She said, are you crazy? You're not going to last. But I was trying to prove to everyone out there and here that what community can do, the power of community. And I think I proved it. But it's going to get to a point now that I really need grants now, because it's not going to last too long. 3 years of that, you know, I'm like, wow, you know. But we don't get grants, we don't get, no. And yes, I see a lot of agencies getting funds, thousands of dollars, and I'd be excited for them, but it seemed like the number's steady going up. We was number 13, we're number 9. And I got a feeling we can be number 5 real soon, you know. And all this money's being funded to homelessness and to poverty. I'm sorry, I don't see it. You know, and I do be excited because I'm thinking it's about to be a change, so I could go ahead and just lay back a little bit. You understand what I'm saying? Because I am a human being. It's stuff that I want to do. I love serving the poor. I love looking out for people. But it's stuff I want to do, like go to school and do other stuff. But I can't do that because we got a problem out here. And I told myself that I need to continue to fight to address these issues.
I think we've got time for one more question.
Thank you very much for sharing your story. It was
Thank
very
you.
Much appreciated. My question sort of stems off from that. This past week, I'm an employee at Upstate, and we just signed up for our United Way. They don't call it that, but that's what it is, in terms of funding, and I would love to give funding through the United Way to your organization. It doesn't sound like you're there yet, maybe. Are you signed up with the United Way, or? No,
at all, no. But I'm definitely a 501c3 organization. You know, yes, 501c3 organization.
Right.
So if someone wants to make a donation, where should they go?
You could go to our page, We Rise Above the Streets Recovery Outreach. Is a donation button on Facebook. And on our website is weriseabovethestreet.org. Or you go to PayPal and weriseabovethestreets@gmail.com.
Alameen, thank you so much for coming and sharing your story with us this morning.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. Thank you.